Welcome to the ISF podcast from the Information Security Forum, featuring timely conversations, practical insights, and resources for global cybersecurity professionals. I'm your host, Tavia Gilbert. Today, ISF CEO Steve Durbin is speaking with Executive Director of the AI Association, Josh Jackson. In his role with the AI Association, Jackson helps represent the industry and advocate and educate government agencies, including the United States Congress. Jackson also serves as Global Head of Government and Public Services for SixClick. Steve and Josh discuss the future of artificial intelligence, how the workforce can survive the coming robot takeover, the role of government in regulating AI and cyber, and more. Here's Steve.
So Josh, thanks very much for joining us. As you know, this particular season of the ISF podcast centers on disruption. And you're uniquely suited to join in that conversation. You're a founder of the AI Association, which has a mission of creating an artificial intelligence future for the economic prosperity, enjoyment, and indeed safety of the American people. Looking forward, automation, AI, they're both undoubtedly going to bring benefits. But there's some sort of inevitability, I suppose, and fundamental shift that they're going to bring around disruption as well, isn't there? Especially, some would say, to working people. So let's start with, tell us a little bit about yourself and your work, and then share some of your thoughts on that element of disruption around AI.
Yeah, sure. Thanks again for having me. And I'm excited about this conversation. So originally, I come from the chemistry world prior to getting into lobbying and the legal world. And you could see this coming even within the sciences. So earlier on in the sciences, I had been thinking about how to automate certain processes. How the world has continued to evolve and technology continues to evolve, but human nature in 2020 was already, you know, it was disrupted by the virus, right? That fundamentally changed everything. And we were looking for ways in the sciences to say, how do we rapidly figure out what molecules, what small molecules are regulating bacteria because of antibiotic resistance? We were thinking about viruses coming along. How do these viruses or these bacteria evolve so fast, right? And what can we do simultaneously to combat those? And if we don't have, and this is where I really got into the field of artificial intelligence, if we're not automating or having machines think in a particular way without human interaction, then we can start making those fundamental shifts to combat viruses, to combat bacteria, to think about our environment and how we can reverse sort of this atmospheric cancer that's going on. And the only way to do it is really with algorithms, because everything is moving at a rapid pace. Technology is getting stronger, and there's no way that we can individually keep up with how fast everything is moving around us. Nature to technology. And that's what I think is exciting about automation and artificial intelligence for prosperity. Yeah, we do use the United States, right? As we're based here in the US. But I think for across the globe, I'm thinking about from a humanity aspect, how do we use this for the good? And I've been thinking about that since 2008, right? When I was in the lab pipetting like mad, thinking about, okay, there's got to be a better way rather than just me moving the pipette along.
Right. I mean, that for me is a really good example of machine, if you like, taking over what I would consider to be some of the more mundane elements of what's going on. And that for me is one of the benefits, certainly if I look at it from the security space, the security industry, you know, artificial intelligence has a huge amount to offer in that space, because people, humans, are not great at doing some of those mundane things like, you know, watching networks, for instance. We get tired. We go and do something different. We miss things. AI can really compensate for that, can't it? So clearly there's sort of a focus area there. But I suppose the piece that concerns people is when you move beyond that. You know, you get into this whole realm then, don't you, of who's in control here? Is it the artificial intelligence? Is it me as an individual? Is there a kill switch? Or, you know, how's it all going? How are we going to coexist with it, I guess, is my question.
Yeah. So I'm going to take this two different routes, because we've been talking about jobs, like how do you lose jobs, right? So if we think about the pipetting scenario here, let's take it one step further. Now a robot is doing some of these mundane tasks.
Right.
Sometimes things are going to go wrong and you need not only someone to understand the code, understand the math, right? Like that's one big piece that everyone's working hard on.
Right.
But there's also that other aspect of what about a suction cup that's picking up an item and being moved? That still has to be cleaned. That still has to be maintained, right? So there's still a lot of pieces within the robot. Maybe it's oiling different joints on the robot and the movement, right? And so being able to observe that, that in itself is a job to make sure all these things are functioning beyond the code on the other end. So there's still room for the smaller, I say smaller, but it's still a job that is required and is needed. And who's going to do that? We need people to understand the mechanics of robots beyond just the coding of the robot. So those are two different roles, which I think shows a lot of promise that I'll expand on this example. So one of my students at a university, we're talking about this and he said, hey, I was hired for, you know, a maintenance job working in the, we had robots and all of a sudden they didn't have someone to clean the robot. He's like, I didn't know anything about robots, right? And so he had to learn on the job, learn about robots. And then he learned, he just kept expanding his knowledge around how does this robot work? And they'd give him a manual and they would do on the job training. And he got really excited about it, right? And expanded beyond him sweeping the floors. It moved him into a role of, okay, I'm going to learn about this machine and how it's going to work. So yeah, there's disruption, but I think it's an exciting disruption.
And it doesn't preclude, does it? I think, which is the interesting thing about the point you're making there. It doesn't preclude jobs being created for individuals. Now, it is sort of man and machine working together in that particular instance, you know, humans, machines coexisting. And for me, I think what I find interesting about it is that tension between the two, because it is a tension that needs to be managed. You can't just hand it all over. And the kill switch thing that I mentioned there is one that's pretty close to my heart. I have this, you know, I've been working with computers all my adult life. And there's one thing I've concluded with them, and that is that they break. They do things wrong. You know, you need to intervene in some way. I'll give you an example. I have a German car. I won't tell you which brand. I was driving down the road the other day, parked it, got back in after I'd been to one of the stores, and suddenly the whole thing lights up and it tells me there are 6 or 7 different warnings. You know, this isn't working, that isn't working, the other's not working, but I can still drive the car, it says. So I do. So I get it home, I turn it off, and suddenly all those faults have cleared.
Yeah.
Now, that for me is, I suppose, what some people then use as a reason for not moving more quickly into, say, you know, pilotless aircraft or autonomous cars and all of this kind of thing. So how do we manage that tension? How do we cope with the fact that artificial intelligence, machines, computers are not perfect? Neither are we as people. So how do we come together?
That's a great point. How do we come together is, I think it's always the unknown, right? That is always driving some of this fear. And I think if we can continue to learn and open our minds to a different culture, that's what's going to help drive the working together. It wasn't long ago that we were confused about the internet, right? 20 right. years ago, everyone was going, well, what is this internet thing? What is online? What does it even mean? This seems scary, right? That you can buy anything online. Mm-hmm. And I think the same goes with moving into electronics within a vehicle. You mentioned electronics in a vehicle. At one point, there were no electronics in a vehicle, right? Everyone was afraid to get in a car because there's something different. And I think we need to move beyond that sort of, I see as almost like a pessimistic view rather than an opportunistic view. right? And even in business, we like to use the term sunk cost rather than here's a new situation, here's a new opportunity. This is going to give us a faster response time for cybersecurity, or this is going to give us more opportunities to combat a bacteria, right?
Right.
Change the game in terms of antibiotic resistance. Change the game in terms of how do we automate and get more food in the hands of individuals. Change the opportunity for being able to communicate, right? We're communicating from across the pond, right? And I think the more we work on it and the more it continues to evolve, then we're going to have a faster response time even here. So that's kind of how I look at it is I think we need it individually. We need to change that narrative that's going on, and we'll be able to work through it once we see the possibilities.
I think that's a pretty good point. And I think that it isn't just semantics. There is language in all this, isn't there? We know we talk very often about disruption. And for a lot of people, that has negative connotation. But actually, disruption is positive in a lot of instances. And I think that's what you're saying. You know, we need to flip it slightly and look at some of the positive aspects. But let me play the negative old cynic for a moment. The internet, which you mentioned as being a really strong disruptor and something that has enabled tremendous amount of innovation. Again, putting my cybersecurity hat back on, the internet has facilitated, some would say, a phenomenal increase in cybercrime. The ability for cyber criminals to hide, to share information that law enforcement can't get access to. And it is of pandemic proportion. Back when the internet was being invented, you know, Tim Berners-Lee never imagined that it would go the way that it's gone. And if you talk to him today, of course, he's got all sorts of different views on how to control it or not and that kind of thing. I suppose there'll be a lot of people listening to this who will have a similar concern around artificial intelligence. Mm-hmm. So the question really is, how do we plan for a future where we know that there are going to be as many, some would say more, bad guys keen to make use of artificial intelligence as there are good guys who are going to be using it for all of the great things you've just been talking about? How do we plan for that and how do we deal with it?
Yeah, I think you're right. I mean, there's always this possibility that the AI systems can be hacked, they can be manipulated, they can be fooled, they can be evaded, they can be misled. Right. And this thought that it's not going to be manipulated, we have to think about the training of the data, training of the individuals using it, the exploitation of model sensitivities. If in what I just said, we can go on a tangent on workforce development right there. Are we going to lose jobs? Well, all the things that I just talked about need someone to work in this arena.
Right. Right.
Obviously, we're not going that direction, but I want to make that side note there. Mm-hmm. So there has to be a way to secure the data, and there has to be a way to train in a very focused manner around this in order to combat all those issues.
And let me ask you a question, because I know that you do a lot of work in Washington, D.C. and around policy development and that kind of thing. Is that a job or is that a role for government, do you believe? Or is that private sector who should be doing these things, or both? Where do you sit on that?
I'm in the public-private partnership.
Right.
And you need to have both. If one is working on their own, it doesn't work. There needs to be sort of that harmony to, what is it? The rising tide lifts all ships, right?
Right.
Yeah. Saying, if you don't have government working with a private sector and flip it, then it's not going to work. We have a ton of talent in the private sector, and it needs that extra push from governments to get it in the market.
Right. Okay. And I'm going to come back to that in a moment, but I do want to go off on this little sidebar that we had there around the people side of things, but I want to take a slightly different twist on it. And I want to go into in this issue of ethics around AI, because I know that's something that you're passionate about, right? You're passionate about ethics. AI and automation are going to demand thoughtful decision-making around the ethics of its deployment, about how it's rolled out across, doesn't matter which sector. Tell me about that. Where do we go with the whole ethical piece first? Because if we get that bit right, then we stand half a chance probably of being able to put the right policies in place from a government standpoint and public, private, all of those things. And we'll get to that. But let's start with ethics.
Yeah. The biases that we all bring to the table individually. For me, I see with artificial intelligence that there's a way, obviously you need to know the code. You need to know how things are coded, what the math is behind it. But it's almost like there's an audit trail there if you know how to look and how to get deep on it. Where with human beings, there's some biases that you can hide a lot easier. Like it's really hard for you to plug something into, you know, my brain and try and figure out what bias is there. Right. And, but with the code, you know, I think it's a lot of people just don't know too much about how the code is run or the math behind it. And if you dig deep enough, you're going to be able to find what's happening, right? Maybe there's a way to hide some of the unintentional pieces around biases, but I think you can really get deeper into that. And so I think it's a benefit actually for seeing how people are training the data and how people are developing the code to understand ethically what's going on. That's kind of where I sit on it. And right. I think historically humans are biased just because of their design. And I think if we can design AI the right way and understand it, we're going to kind of shift it to be more objective. And the system's going to be more objective around the bias.
Any examples you can give of somebody doing that who, you know, in your view is going down the right track at the moment?
Yeah, I think that is definitely the challenge, right? And this goes back to the public partnership and government. Yeah. We've kind of seen between Google and Facebook, there's a lot of things happening that you're like, yep, AI ethical researchers are out on Google. Facebook has always had their issues. And then Apple has kind of been this mixture between back and forth, like as a superpower of fighting for privacy rights and ethical rights in the US, but succumbing to pressures of the Chinese government because the money is so vast.
Right.
So I think it's not the machine that's having the issue. It's the folks that are running the organization that are having the issues on ethical use of artificial intelligence.
And how do we influence government to take a stronger or leading or whatever we want to call it role in figuring that one out, in providing some of the lanes that we know we can safely drive between?
The biggest part is education. I mean, that is, I think, always been the challenge is understanding it. If we use the analogy of the internet, and we've talked about Facebook already, those already, the government in the US didn't know what the internet was going to be like, and they had to learn, and it took forever. And Facebook was the same way, right? Where they still don't know how Facebook makes money. So I think that education needs to go faster, and those from the private sector need to continue to educate as much as possible the leaders that are writing these laws and regulations.
And do you think that the current administration has the intellectual horsepower to go there? I mean, for a lot of people listening to this will be thinking back to some of those congressional hearings, you know, with Zuckerberg, and they made for dreadful watching from a technology standpoint because the level of misunderstanding of what was going on was so very apparent. Here we are talking about something that is probably even more advanced than that, right? So is the intellectual horsepower there?
I think it is. There are pieces that I think how government is set up takes a little bit of time.
Right.
But you take the national economics advisor here, he came from BlackRock, right?
Right.
And they're all, he's talking about sustainability, he's talking about cybersecurity. These are the pieces that need to be put into place and thought about prior to anything. And they're shifting for the last 5 years or so, they've shifted their investment strategy to think about sustainability in cybersecurity. So I think it's there. It's just navigating through the appropriate channels and getting 400 plus congressional leaders on the right page and 100 senators, right? And how do you interact with everyone else, their constituents? And I think that's where it all needs to go, but I think it's there.
And you're doing it as well. I mean, I would say in something of a goldfish bowl, because everything, of course, has a camera pointing at it, which, you know, seconds later ends up on social media, which is then, you know, changed. Everyone has their view, of course, because it's so much easier to do it from the kitchen than it is when you're actually in a congressional chamber. So what I'm hearing you say is that you do believe that there is the right level of understanding now. There is the right level of intent, I would go so far as to say. Artificial intelligence clearly is important at a government level. Mm-hmm. Doesn't matter whether we're talking about the US, we're talking about China, we're talking about Europe, we're talking about the UK. It doesn't matter. That's the future.
Correct.
Where do you think some of the traditional Western governments, if I could put it that way, are going to end up when it comes to artificial intelligence, innovation, technology versus some of the emergent approaches that we're seeing from China, for example?
Yeah, I think right now we're losing.
Right.
We're losing. And one of the major issues has always been with China, they've always thought really long term. Mm-hmm. I mean, you got to give them credit for that, that they've always thought long term here. And I mean, they've been around for a lot longer than we have on this side. A lot longer, right? So being able to, I mean, we do have some advantage of adapting, being smaller, having the advantage of adapting, being pretty open-minded on this end. So I wouldn't say we've lost hope, but China is pushing really hard and they've put a lot of effort into artificial intelligence and longevity of even 50 years from now. Like they're thinking 50 years from now, we're thinking, how do we get through this pandemic and the next through this administration? And I think those are two fundamental differences, is that we have to think about that. Even in Europe, right? I think today Europe has been thinking about artificial intelligence a lot better than the US and putting out their proposal for regulations. And what is that going to do? And we as businesses in the US need to put more effort around that, because those are two competing interests, I think.
Right. So what is it that you think individual enterprises need to be doing?
I mean, they need to be educating those around them. 79% of employers are hiring people around artificial intelligence, right?
Right.
If you have a little bit of understanding, you have a leg up on that. And those that are adopting that technology and educating those around them around artificial intelligence, putting that economic pressure, putting that pressure on the government is going to help raise those interests. We see that actually now where we're putting pressure on institutions in government and agencies to say, hey, you need to adopt artificial intelligence. Here's the understanding behind it. Here's how much benefit you're going to get from it. And putting that in the minds of everybody in government agencies. And I think if more people start doing that, we're going to be better off.
Let me ask you what some people might think is a rather unfair question, but I'll let you pick a sector of your choice, right? So whichever sector you like. Roll it forward for us, say 10 years. What does it look like? What is artificial intelligence doing in that, in your favorite sector?
I don't know if it's my favorite sector, but I'm excited about transportation.
Right.
I really am. I think a lot of people are excited about transportation or retail and hospitality. Those are just, I would say, the things that people don't really want to do.
Right.
Those are going to be exciting to be around and saying, all right, I'm going to go to a restaurant and some of these processes are just going to be automated, or getting to a restaurant is going to be automated. And you're either going to walk or you're going to get on something crazy and be there safely and in no time. Because, and I think transportation, the reason why I'm leaning towards that is how many people are distracted on the road already by looking at their phone. I mean, there's no way we're going to be able to change the don't look at your phone, We've tried that with different things, but can we put someone in an automated vehicle and they don't have to be distracted? I think that's the autonomous vehicle sector is going to be super exciting in 10 years.
Fantastic. We'll come back in 10 years and we'll have this conversation again. We'll see whether or not it really was spot on the money. Josh, look, it's been fantastic talking to you. I mean, this whole topic, we could sit here and we could talk for hours. We've only just begun to scratch the surface. But, you know, for me, it is a tremendously exciting area, I think, particularly from the security standpoint. We do have the ethical issue that we've touched on. We've got regulation. We've got the role of government. It's got everything, really, that I think needs to be there in terms of really formulating the future. We're just going to have to wait and see whether or not it all comes together in the right way, I guess.
Yeah, I agree. And I'll touch on education one last time, because if you're in your 30s, if you're in your 40s, if you're in your 50s, if you're in your 60s, the way that advancement in medicine is occurring, it's so early still in this realm, you should be thinking about it. You should be learning something around it. If you're earlier on, then from the education sector, we need to do more coding. We need to learn more of these things because you're going to have to know it.
Right.
You're 30, you're 40, you're 50, right? You still have another 20 years. You're going to need coding done, and you're going to want to do it rather than waiting on a technician to show up and try and fix it. I think we just all need to continue to educate ourselves. And that's what's exciting about the opportunity, are those folks that are putting in the effort to learn something new, because it's not going away. It's only going to grow even bigger. Same with, say, your Alexa or whatever device that you have in your home. Learning how to code and manipulate some of those processes is fun from a consumer standpoint, rather than trying to hire someone to do it for you.
I think that's absolutely right. And that for me is probably one of the more positive elements of it. You know, technology is fun. You know, security can be fun. AI is fun. All of these things we're talking about, it is fun, and it's fun because it stretches you mentally, and it brings back some of that control, I guess, that for a lot of people, it feels perhaps slipping away a little bit with technology. And to your point, you know, it doesn't have to. And indeed, it's incumbent upon each of us to grab it back, I guess. So, Josh, thank you so much for taking the time to talk to me here. Some really interesting areas that we just touched on, and I'd love to talk to you again at some point in the future just to see how things have progressed. So thank you very much indeed.
Thanks, Steve.
Thanks to this week's guest, Josh Jackson. Next week, before a week's break, we'll revisit Steve's conversation with philosopher, author, and speaker Anders Inset from the 2020 ISF Congress, in which they discussed leadership and responding to disruption. Here's a preview of that conversation.
So what is the essential stuff, right? What is it that we value, really? And I think if we don't define that, you know, technology doesn't have a soul or a purpose. It's not good or bad. It just is. It's very efficient. It could be radical in its outcome. But you see, we don't define a goal. When we say digital transformation, what the hell are we transforming into? Mm-hmm. And we don't define what is enough. What do we want to achieve?
We'll be back for the full interview in a week. In the meantime, we'd appreciate it if you would consider writing a short review of our podcast. This will help us reach new listeners. If you do have a moment, we would be very grateful. If there's a topic or a question that you'd like us to cover in a future episode, let us know at securityforum.org. And while you're there, explore our catalog of past video and podcast episodes, along with ISF's research, practical tools, and guidance related to discussions like today's. Find us on LinkedIn by searching CEO Steve Durbin or Security Forum, and follow our audio feed wherever you get your podcasts, and you'll never miss an episode. The ISF podcast is produced by TalkBox and Tavia Gilbert, with music by Alexander Filipiak. Associate producer Katie Flood. Mix and master by Brian Barney. Thanks for listening.